gentlemen, welcome back to the Being Husband Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan West, bringing you guys another episode here, telling you all like I always do, gents. Thank you so much for being a part of the work that we're doing. Guys, if you've been with us for any length of time, then you know what we're all about here. We're here to help you as a man build a household that stands. And today is no different than that. No, today we're going to have a very, very honest conversation. Very honest conversation. They said, Jonathan, all your conversations are honest. I agree. I don't disagree with that. But this was something that I was just reflecting on a little while ago. In fact, it was after Easton was born, Easton, my son. And that is why we owe our wives our best. What's the reasoning behind that? When you say best, Jonathan, what exactly do you mean? I'm going to get into all of that. But first, I do want to thank so much my good friend, Will Spencer, for producing this podcast. Will has become a good friend of mine, and he's also an audio extraordinaire, shall I say. And he is the reason that the production sounds as well as it does. Guys, he does it for a really, really low price. Absolutely fantastic. If you're a podcaster, I encourage you to reach out to Will Spencer on Instagram. That's at Rent of Men. He's got his own podcast called The Renaissance of Men. And so I encourage you, number one, to check out his podcast because it's fire. And then number two, to if you're a podcaster yourself and you're looking to up your audio game, I encourage you to reach out to Will. He makes it really affordable. He'll work with you on pricing as well as payment scheduling. So consider working with Will Spencer. Visit him again at Rent of Men on Instagram. That's at Rent of Men on Instagram. So why do we owe our wives our best? Now, let me paint the picture a little bit, because when I say that to a man, or when you hear that in a sermon, man up, right? Or that you owe your wife your best. There's a group of people that when they hear that, they think that means, well, I need to do whatever she says when she says it. Right. And the reality is that that's not a biblical view, right? The idea of happy wife, happy life is not biblical. And in fact, happy wife, happy life is antithetical. And you can see its consequences very clear in Genesis. Because the story of Adam and Eve is nothing short of a man that had not followed what God had told him to do, how he told him to lead the relationship, and decided that it was more important to go along to get along. That's literally what that story is about. And some say, oh, Jonathan, you're oversimplifying it. Am I? Right? When you go and you read that story, right? Eve goes and she gets tempted, and then she takes a bite of the fruit of a tree of knowledge of good and evil. She presents it to her husband who was with her. Don't miss that part. He was there. Adam was there. And so what do you do with that? Right? The guy that's supposed to be leading, protecting, was not leading or protecting. He was standing right there while his wife was being tempted and then fell into sin. He watched her do it and then joined in and then blamed her. Okay? So he was all happy wife, happy life until God came on the scene and questioned him about it. Adam was not giving his wife his best. Adam was capitulating. And so what's the distinction there, Jonathan? What does that mean? Well, first we have to have a biblical view of marriage. That's the first thing, okay? And in order to have a biblical view of marriage, we have to have a biblical view of what covenant is. And so covenant relationships are effectively contracts between us and God. And usually they're followed by or preceded by some sort of sacrifice. Abraham had a covenant with God, and that was preceded by a sacrifice. First God kind of threw him a curveball, said, do it, you know, take your son up. And then he took his son up and then switched it on him and provided a ram in the bush. But there was a covenant established with Abraham at that point. The ultimate covenant, though, the new covenant that we have, because that was the covenant with the Jewish people, right? Father Abraham, father of many nations. That was the covenant with the Jewish people. But the full fulfillment or the second iteration of the covenant, what we Christians, Protestants understand is the New Testament, the new covenant, is established by Christ and the sacrifice that he gave. And so the idea of covenant is that because of this bloodshed, because of this sacrifice, I am now bringing you into a relate. This is God talking. I'm now bringing you into a relationship with me. And this relationship has parameters. This relationship has confines. It has a standard that it has to operate by. And if we don't operate by, it's similar to a contract, right? With a contract, if you don't operate by the parameters of the contract, the contract is null and void, right? Covenant is a little bit like that. The difference is that God already knows that there's no way that we're going to be able to uphold the contract, right? But he still establishes that standard in light of the sacrifice that he made, which was the death of his son. And so the point here we can find in Romans 12:1. And it reads, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. And some translations say reasonable service. Right. And then it goes on to say, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And the point there is to say, because I have laid the body of my son down, that was my sacrifice to get into this covenant. What you have to do is you have to lay your life down, but not necessarily to death unless I call that, right? Unless that's a calling for you. But I ask that you be a living sacrifice, right? Which is your reasonable service. It's reasonable of God to ask that of you. It's like, look, guys, I let my son die for the BS that you do on a consistent basis. The least you can do is live out a life that honors me. Not asking much, all right? I already paid the ultimate price. The least you can do is act like you appreciate it, right? That's the simple thing. And so the point that I'm trying to make is that our covenant with God is one in which we live it out on a consistent basis. And the way that we live it out is discussed further in Romans, but there's the idea that we owe God our best. We owe God our best. We owe him the first of our fruit. We owe him the best of our fruit, right? Our lives. And so the reality is that if we're going to do that as living sacrifices, that means that that's going to translate into other relationships, right? Because we're human beings. And so when I say in the intro or in the title of the show that we owe our wives our best, the reason why we owe our wives our best is because of the covenant, right? And the covenant is that we owe God our best fundamentally. Does that make sense? We owe our wives our best because we owe God our best. And so what that means is that the standard of what best means is not set by the whims of our wives. It's not even set by the whims of ourselves, but it is set by the word of God, and it is set in the parameters and standards of the word of God. So why is that important in a Christian marriage? Why is it important to have God as a foundation? It sounds silly to even ask it, right? But why is it critical that we understand that our service to our wives is actually service to God fundamentally? Why does that matter? Let me first say, before I get into why that matters, let me first say why I think we don't appreciate or understand the weight of the covenant that we have with Christ. I think in large part it's because we say things the modern Christian says things like, Jesus is my homie, right? Or Jesus is my homeboy, or me and Jesus like to cut up, or there's no weight to his name. There's no respect really to his name. And so the downstream effects of that, if Jesus is your homie, right? And you guys are supposed to have a covenant. You're supposed to owe him your best, but he's really just your homie. Then it's really not a big deal if you flake on him every now and then, right? You miss time to talk with him. It's really not a big deal that you didn't listen to what he had to say because, you know, he's tripping. right? He's the homie. And that has trickle down effects, because if you would treat the Son of God that way, right? If you would treat the eternal Logos, right, is the name for him. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The name there is Logos. That's the ordering of the universe. God's own Son, Jesus Christ. If you would treat him like you can take it or leave it, what he has to say, how, and you're supposed to be in covenant with him, how do you figure that you're going to treat your wife, right? You're going to view her as something that you solely for your benefit, right? Not something that you owe something to, but something that owes you fundamentally, right? And so you capitulate to her in hopes that she will do what you want her to do. You're a yes man to her because you hope that you can maybe have sex tonight. You're a happy wife, happy life guy because you don't want to rock the boat. You see where I'm going with this? None of what you're doing in the relationship as a husband is of any benefit to her fundamentally. It has everything to do with you. The guy that is the quote unquote nice guy, husband, happy wife, happy life guy, is really just selfish. Is really just in it for himself. Is doing those things because he doesn't want to deal with the tension and the weight of leadership and the weight that God has asked him to take on and the standard that God has placed on him and the standard, by the way, that he owes God anyway. But of course, that man doesn't view that he owes God that way because Jesus is his homie. Jesus is a buddy. So the point being, we cannot effectively serve our wives or give them our best if we don't properly understand that we owe God something and thus owe our wives something. And a lot of times those conversations and that way of leadership can be uncomfortable at times when we don't value the sacrifice, right? The sacrifice that it costs to be in this covenant. We don't value our relationship with Christ. How in the hell do you think you're going to value the relationship genuinely that you have with your wife and really give her your absolute best, right? Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for it. You think happy wife, happy life, nice guy is giving of himself? You think the guy that capitulates to the whims of his wife is laying his life down for her? No, he just doesn't want the drama. That's what it is. Listen, I'm going to call it like I see it, man. And I know you. I love you, Mr. Nice Guy, Mr. Happy Wife, Happy Life. I know you. I've been you. Okay? It's me and you talking right now. I get it. You don't want the drama. You don't want the smoke. You don't want to hear about, you think you always this and da da da. You're not trying to do that. You're not trying to have any of that energy around you. You're just trying to have a nice time, have yourself a drink, chill out. Right? Enjoy your summer. Enjoy your spring. You don't want any of the smoke. Here's the reality, though. Your lack of leadership, you're not giving your wife your best, and therefore not giving God your best, has consequences. It has consequences in the short term, and it has consequences in the long term. Long term, your wife will lose respect for you. Short term, you might have a little victory, right? You might be okay, right? You might not be, but you might be all right in the short term. But in the long run, there will be no respect. And in long, long run, you will be held accountable for what you did not do and what you did do. Nothing will go unmentioned in that day. When you meet your maker, in that day, when you meet God, he will hold you accountable for the way in which you led your wife. Did you hold the standard? Did you tell her what I told you, right? Or did you play the same role that Adam did in the beginning and just go along to get along and lead her right into destruction? Did you know that you carried that much weight? Did you know that we carried that much weight as husbands? That the direction of our wives is largely contingent on how we lead them. the environment that we set up for them. And so here, let's get to the practical, okay? Because Jonathan, that's nice. It sounds good. I appreciate the theology. How do I give my wife my best? Well, one thing I think is clear. I think that we have to have patience with our wives. I know a lot of guys right now, myself included, will look at their wives and come up with a list of things that they don't do or that they aren't. Well, she doesn't cook, or she doesn't clean, or she doesn't, you know, do this in the bedroom or do that. And she won't listen to what I have to say and all these different things. And while I understand where they're coming from, you have to understand the modern day woman has been fed a steady and slow drip of feminism from the time that she came out of her mom's womb to right now. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. The idea that men are not valuable, that she doesn't need to listen to a man, the idea that, yeah, she should actually be the one that's calling the shots, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. You don't have an opportunity to give your best, right? And so what I'm trying to suggest is that you, as you take on the role of leading your household, and as you really seek the Lord's face in the midst of it to give you the guidance on how to do it right, how to do it how he wants you to do it, as you do that and you start to really take the reins, you might encounter resistance. And what I'm saying is, we have to be patient. We have to be patient and take our time, because what we're dealing with right now are women that have not been taught in the discipline and the admonition of the Lord on how a marriage is supposed to go. And that's the majority. Even in church, the majority have not been taught and have been fed a steady drip of anti-male propaganda. I thought my encouragement is, be patient. Be patient. Stay the course. Stay level-headed, right? And lean on God to give you the insight on how to deal with it. Another big thing I think that we need to be doing is regularly speaking truth to your wife. Regularly speaking truth to your wife. Hey, look, I know that this is going on. Here's what God has to say about it, baby. I don't write the mail. I just deliver it. But this is what we got to do, right? I know we haven't felt like going to church this week, but look, we got to go to church. We need to tithe. We need to be in fellowship with the saints. Part of the deal. We got to do it. We got to do it, right? Hey, look, I know that we wanted to spend money to go X, Y, and Z place here, but I really think it would be a better use from a stewardship perspective that we use the money to go here, right? Hey, look, listen, I know that you don't really like her, okay? But I think that God is calling us to lean into this couple's life in this season that they're in right now, right? I know she's hard to be around, but look, she's going through a lot. They just lost their kid, right? Whatever the thing is, you have to get to a place where it's not about you avoiding the doghouse. We got to get to a place where we're not just trying to avoid the doghouse. We have to get to a place where we are telling our wives the truth and doing so in a way that is not emotional. It's just, that's what we have to do. Look, this is what it is. I don't really have a dog in this fight. This is just what it's got to be. This is just how we have to roll. This is what God is calling for us to do in this moment, right? And some things, it's tough. Some things are going to be wisdom calls. Some things are going to be very black and white, matter of fact, in the word, right? And you're going to have to, when you do make a wisdom call, is you're going to have to back that up scripturally somewhere. Because when it comes to wisdom calls, sometimes it can be a, well, I have women's intuition or something like that. And it could be the case that she has some foresight that you don't know about, right? And that needs to be taken into consideration. I'm not saying that it doesn't. It most certainly does. You need to take woman's insight into consideration. What I am saying is that understand that whatever decision, right, whatever information you take in, the buck stops with you and you will be held accountable for it. That's what I'm saying. So understand that, right? Regularly speak truth and understand that the direction that you go, what you apply is on you. So you better make sure that you are aligning with reality and aligning with truth and regularly speaking that and not just avoiding the doghouse. Another thing is not denying her sexual pleasure. Look, we got to get into this, man. Sex is a gift to your wife. I'm say it again. Sex is a gift to your wife. You're going to get blessed by sex too. Don't get me wrong. You're going to get you're going to get some benefit. Okay, I want maybe not just as much, heck, maybe more, but what I'm saying is that you're going to get blessed too, but you got to understand that sex is a benefit to your wife. You need to be doing the things. Y'all know what I'm talking about. I ain't going to get pornographic on here, all right? But you need to be doing the things that please her, right? You don't need to be, in a Christian context, there is no denial of sex, right? That's not something that you do, okay? There needs to be no denial of sex that's going on. I mean, there's no really allowance for it in scripture. Paul says, don't deny each other sex unless you're fasting, right? I mean, that's really the only case. And then as soon as you get done fasting and praying, get right back in that sack and get it going, you know? So there's no denial of sex, you know, and in that act of sex, we need to be taking care of our wives. And y'all know what I'm talking about, okay? We need to be taking care of them and considering their pleasure in the midst of that. You don't want to just go in there and pump and dump and then you're out and then it's, you know, there's no care. There's no kind of famoose. There's no, you know, romance to it at all. It's just get it done, right? Like you're watching porn or something. It's like, no, man, sex is a sacred thing. And this is a larger point. Once upon a time, sex was seen as sacred and beautiful, so sacred and beautiful that it was not discussed openly as much. and so sacred and beautiful that people actually believed in this thing called modesty. They did. That was a thing that used to exist. We see relics of it now, but our world is largely not that way today. Sex is a commodity now. If you don't, and how you know it's a commodity, obviously you're not a Christian if you're thinking this way, or at least you're not a Christian thinking in a biblical worldview if you're thinking this way. But if it's the case that you're not getting sex from your wife, you can go find other avenues for that, because sex is a commodity now. It's not sacred and beautiful and requires a lot of trust. It's abundant. It's prolific, right? And so with that, for men, there comes this idea where we use our wives in ways that doesn't represent its sacredness, doesn't represent its beauty. Now, obviously, sex, we're using each other, right? Like I'm using my wife and she's using me. There's a mutual giving there. So I don't want to make it sound like it's not what it is. Like it's not spiritual. It's body, right? It's both and, right? But the larger point that I'm making is that when we view it just in the context of what we can get out of it, and we're not looking at what we can give to our wives, we remove the sacred from it. And it just becomes a dispensary or a depository. Maybe is a better way to put that. And so we need to be thinking about how we can give her what she needs. And I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to leave that point right at that. Next point, and I think this is the final one, working hard to earn income as much as you can so that she doesn't have the pressure to produce for the family. Now, this may be a little controversial, but I'm going to just say it anyway. Biblically speaking, your wife should not have to feel the weight of caring for and providing for the family. Now, what I did not say is that your wife should not work. It's not what I said. What I did not say is that you should be the breadwinner. I did not say that. What I said was, is that your wife should not have the pressure to be the primary provider for the family. Now you say, oh, Jonathan, man, that sounds like you're saying she can't be the breadwinner. Listen, hear me when I say this. I think it is critical as a man that you understand the severity of this verse. And this verse goes like this. A man that fails to provide for his household is worse than an unbeliever because he has denied the faith. You and me need to internalize that verse. Why? Because what that verse is suggesting is that if we are not taking it upon ourselves, responsibly stewarding and guiding and leading and directing how income comes into the house, if we're not the sole folks that are in charge of that, I'm not even saying that you got to be the breadwinner. I'm just saying if you're not in charge of that role, you're worse than an unbeliever according to scripture. Why? Because you have denied the faith. And what is that faith? If we're to act as Christ and our wives to act as the church in submission to Christ, ask yourself the question, does the church provide for Christ fundamentally? And you would have to conclude no. Does Christ overwhelmingly, exceedingly, abundantly provide for his people, the church? And you would have to say yes. There is no real wiggle room in there, guys. It's either you're taking care of your family as the primary provider of your house or you're not. That's just it. And there's no wiggle room in that. Like we can kind of, maybe you can figure out some loopholes or whatever, but the verse says what it says. And so if your wife feels pressure to provide for the house, to carry the team on her back, you're not doing your job. We're not doing our job if our wives feel the pressure of that. Again, we owe our wives because we owe God. We owe our wives our best because we owe God our best. He gave us his best. And so how dare I, honestly, man, try to figure out loopholes in this? I don't have any, I don't have any real reason to find a loophole in this. And the reason why is because the you giving your wife your best and by giving God your best is only going to benefit your marriage. It's only going to benefit your marriage, especially if you have a wife that is submitted to God herself, to Christ herself. It's only going to benefit the marriage. And I would just encourage you as a brother to reflect on the reality of what you owe God, what he gave you. He's not asking for much. He gave you his son. In return, you get eternity with him, right? He's asking you to live like you appreciate it, to live like you appreciate it. And as you do live that way, he gets glory from that. Glory from the fact that you want to please her sexually. Glory from the fact that you want to work hard so that the pressure of income is not squarely on her. Glory in the fact that you speak truth to her regularly. Because you don't care if you're in the doghouse or not. You love her and you're not willing to let her live and believe a lie. This is what we owe God. to live in truth and be men of truth and to lead in truth. If you're unwilling to do that, brother, you need to think about the team you're playing on. You need to decide, right? Am I going to owe God my best? Am I going to give him my best? Or am I just going to not? And if you're not, get out of the game. Because one thing is clear, God is not a fan of lukewarm. In Revelation, he says, I spit you out of my mouth because you're lukewarm. I'd rather you be hot or you be cold. So pick, gentlemen. Are you going to give God your best and thus your wife your best? Or are you going to piddle paddle around? Or are you just going to not? Just go. Just if you're going to not, just decide not. No piddle paddle. Just decide. And it's with that, gentlemen, I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Hope you got something out of it. If you did, I encourage you, leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes. It helps get us a lot more visibility, which is important because we're trying to help other men build households and build them where they stand. So I encourage you guys to do that. And if the spirit moves you as well, I do ask that you all would join the Patreon page, patreon.com/beinghusband. Pod, our Patreon page, you can join as little as $2 a month. That helps kind of keep the lights on. As much as $10 a month, and you have access to all kinds of discounts that I've got. I've got discounts for fitness training with Nomad Fitness and a bunch of other discounts as well, guys. So I encourage you to do that today. And as we always say, gents, take care and build on.